Tesla was well acquainted with Leonora's machine, but he also knew that humanity would never even suspect that this instrument, complete and ready for instant operation, has stood for many years in a room in a cave in Wyoming. So he invented a radio. He got the public interested in radio and television. Then to author H. Matthews he gave a design for an interplanetary communications set. He left to Matthews the task of getting the public interested in communicating with the inhabitants of other planets. He took the young Otis Carr under his guidance and into his confidence, and told him that he was to explore space. He left to Carr the task of getting the public interested in actual mechanical spaceships, and the task of building such spaceships. Now comes the next phase of the unfoldment. To Saint Germain's disciples have been entrusted the task of actually publicizing the divine plan and urging the people to cooperate with the Aquarian Age program of restoring their planet Earth to its rightful place as Freedom's Star. In the cosmic records the name of our great Aquarian Lightbearer is not Sanctus Germanus. Our holy brother is known as Freedom. The Earth is known as his star, or Freedom's Star, for he has labored steadily for more than 70,000 years, without respite, to bring this planet to its present point of evolutionary unfoldment. This planet has a pulsing heart center at the core of the Earth, but it likewise has a pulsing heart upon the surface. The United States of America. Surrounding this power source are the great American continents. North, Central and South. Saint Germain might have had his ascension over 70,000 years ago, but he refused in order to remain an embodiment, close to his people, and guide them to freedom. His active work for freedom on Freedom's Star now stems from the American Heart Center. He has worked through thousands of years in close association with the ascended being known as Lady Nada, who was recently appointed Chuan of the Sixth Ray. Saint Germain and Lady Nada have brought civilization after civilization into the light, despite every obstacle presented by the dark forces. They will bring our civilization into the light, and it is the great privilege of humanity to assist them in this phase of the divine plan. These are the things it is necessary to review when we consider such a concept as free energy, and such mechanisms as those presented by Tesla, Matthews and Carr. These men are pioneers. But there will be many, many others, all working toward the light, until all humanity will be illumined. The mechanisms already described, all based on the free energy concept, whether invented by struggling disciples, or beings already ascended, like Tesla and Leonora, all point to one thing. The hour of freedom is here. It is not some dreamy, metaphysical concept. It is a reality. It is the freedom that leads to man's ascension. It is freedom from the curse of drudgery. No longer will coal, petroleum and gas hold humanity in enslavement. Existence limited by that type of primitive power will shortly come to an end, and with the change over to free energy will come an entirely new way of life, an economic system based on unlimited abundance instead of scarcity, maximum leisure and a work schedule devoted only to those constructive creative efforts designed to produce heaven on earth in accordance with the divine plan for this planet. Tesla held this vision for humanity as a sacred and inviolate trust, even when the dark forces, entrenched behind the world money racket, made it impossible for him to develop his world wireless system for power distribution, and when the same forces of evil, entrenched behind the world political racket, made it impossible for his anti-war machine to be accepted, Tesla's felt no sense of frustration or defeat, for he knew the physical activities would continue as usual through his many disciples. He knew well the face of his father, and his brushes with evil forces on the physical plane touched him but lightly. At the moment we are still faced with the same problems that faced Tesla, but the old order changeth swiftly. After Tesla tried to get the various governments to accept the anti-war machine in 1935 and failed, he asked Arthur H. Matthews to continue working on the design, and to experiment with certain improvements. He had assigned the work to Matthews in 1934 and it has been in his trust since that date. Matthews has operated an experimental workshop in Canada since 1904. It was in this laboratory, near Quebec, that he built the Tesla Interplanetary Communications Set, in 1947. Arthur Matthews was a boy in England and his father, an electrical engineer, was working there with Lord Kelvin, when he first met Tesla. Kelvin had become interested in Tesla's wonderful new discovery of wireless or radio, and had invited Tesla to come to England to discuss the subject. It was there that the lifelong friendship began between Tesla and the Matthews, father and son. The three worked together until the death of Mr. Matthews, the father, in 1915. Then Arthur Matthews carried on until Tesla left the physical plane in 1943, and has continued the activity since. During his last years, after the farewell of the Dove, Tesla turned over a vast amount of material to Matthews in trust and confidence. He had in earlier years inspired Otis T. Carr to pursue 30 years of basic research leading to the present development of the car free energy devices and the car spaceship. Apparently Tesla did not acquaint John J. O'Neill with any of these facts, because O'Neill claimed that Tesla had left a few papers in his safe and that these comprised the extent of his heritage. In fact, when Tesla died in New York City on the night of January 7, 1943, it was generally assumed that his earthly work was finished. The forces of darkness rejoiced at news of his death, which they considered most opportune. The world was at war and under pressure of this need. The patents of Tesla were considered as royal plunder. The government agents moved in swiftly and seized all papers which Tesla had left in his safe, never suspecting that the incomparable genius had left them there merely to satisfy the idle curiosity of nosy people. Later, after due inspection and after World War II, most of the papers were considered of such little value that they were turned over to the Tesla Institute in Belgrade, despite the fact that Tito was in power in that country. The Yugoslav Institute recently published, in English, a very impressive volume which they indicate is definitive, and which lists about 87 Tesla patents, together with reprints of some of his lectures and a brief story of his life. However, Arthur Matthews is acquainted with at least 1,200 inventions, very important inventions, perfected by Tesla. He is only amused when he inspects recently published volumes, such as the Yugoslav book and another New American book, purporting to set forth the true facts about Tesla. These researchers have scraped the bottom of the barrel trying to turn up Tesla's inventions, but they all seem to stop when they reach number 85. Falling 1,115 short of the correct total. Many top-flight scientists seek out Arthur Matthews these days in a belated attempt to pump him for information about Tesla's discoveries. But Arthur Matthews wisely keeps his own counsel. He also keeps the confidence and trust which Tesla bestowed upon him. However, the scientists do not go away empty-handed, even if they do depart with an empty. Mr. Matthews gives to each and every one a sound piece of advice which he, himself, has tested over the years, and which he has found to be the ultimate goal for all seekers. Page 187. Every time we wish to do something, he says, we should go to God first for wisdom, because he is the author of all science. Tesla was able to accomplish so much and see into the future because he understood God. From my own personal contacts with the space people, I find that their advancement is due to their faith and their obedience to divine law. We might pause here and remember that the laggards lagged only because they had lost their faith in God and refused to serve the light. The scientists who visit Matthews usually arrive heavily burdened with many university degrees and much learning, but, as they confess, they somehow missed Tesla and now they would like to know something about him. Tucked under their arm is the new communist-issued volume on Tesla which they have just purchased in order to bone up on the subject of the great scientist who did his major work in the United States. But something is either wrong with them or wrong with the book, because the two cannot get together. So they trek all the way to Quebec, and far beyond Quebec, out into the deep countryside of lakes and forests, in order to seek out Matthews in the hope of getting some light on the subject of Tesla's theories, which they admit they cannot grasp. Mr. Matthews receives them in his serene and cordial way, and then he tells them, as kindly as he can, if you would understand Tesla, you must first attune your mind to God. Since the unfortunate scientists usually know less about God than they know about Tesla, the result is confusion worse confounded. Since publication of Return of the Dove was first announced over a year ago, the forces of darkness, especially in the United States, have become very active in their efforts to suppress the truth about Tesla. Matthews and Carr have been ridiculed repeatedly, and often by the very scientists and government officials who sought their advice. The present author has received hundreds upon hundreds of letters praising her efforts, but she has received a few telling her she is just plain crazy. The writers do not explain why they think so, but they just think so. Oddly enough, these critical letters, so naive they might have been written by a somewhat retarded schoolboy, come only from men who call themselves experts and authorities. They are experts, to be sure, but it must be clearly understood that they are experts in working for the dark forces only. They are authorities on the subject of evil. They are the chosen tools of the black magicians who roamed the astral plane freely and even the physical plane until just before the opening days of World War II, when they met their comeuppance from the forces of light. It was at that time that the great prince of the archangels, Lord Michael, in one mighty Herculean effort, led the forces of light against the forces of evil and put the last of the black magicians on this planet out of business permanently and forever. There has not been such a house cleaning on this earth since the laggards came. After he finished that mopping up operation, Michael cleaned out a horrible astral center which had hovered over Africa since Lemurian days, releasing thousands and thousands of earthbound entities who had been trapped there for countless centuries. This astral cloud had so lowered the vibrations in Africa that the country became historically known as a land of darkness. The Dark Continent. Michael's angelic legions were lined up, tier upon tier, so that they formed a dome over the astral cloud, and as the trapped souls were cut free they floated upward, each one ballooning right into the arms of a waiting angel. They were carried swiftly away to temples of the violet fire, and today these millions of disembodied ones are being healed, purified, and trained, so that they can be restored to civilization at some future date. The entire astral cloud of continuation, so dreadful it is impossible to imagine, was then dissolved by legions of angels firing it through and through with lightning-like bolts of ray energy. The released matter, so long and so cruelly imprisoned, was carried back to the sun for repolarization. But that was not all, for Michael then tackled his third great house cleaning job in the astral region over Siberia, where for countless centuries a compound had been maintained for disembodied souls who had refused to serve the light. In the astral cloud over Africa, the earthbound souls were all persons who had failed to develop much intelligence when an embodiment. They were so retarded in evolution and so attached to matter, they simply had no desire to learn or to handle new experiences. They did not refuse to serve the light, because they were not able to even generate enough energy to make a decision one way or the other. They had free will, and they could have freed themselves from bondage, received training, and then returned into incarnation. But they simply did not wish to be bothered. But the tens of thousands of disembodied individuals who were held in the compound were of an entirely different caliber. While in physical incarnation they had sat in high places, they had educational advantages and trained intellects. They had swayed large masses of people by their opinions and activities. They had positions as military leaders, theologians, fortune makers, doctors, scientists and teachers. But they were confirmed skeptics. Ambitious, cunning, proud, and extremely expedient. They never missed an advantage, regardless of result and harm to others. They were basically criminal but outwardly respectable. They were all tools of black magicians, devoting their lives on Earth to serving the forces of darkness. They knew about the forces of light, but ridiculed all those who tried to serve the light in a simple and practical manner, free from orthodox trappings. Over the centuries, as these individuals shed their physical bodies, their vibrations magnetically drew them into the compound. In order to spare the population needless suffering, these tyrants were not permitted to reincarnate. Neither were they permitted to mingle with other disembodied persons on the astral plane. If they decided through the exercise of their own free will to serve the light, they knew they would be immediately freed from the compound and could resume a normal existence. But so great was their rebellion that they remained bottled up and isolated as the years passed, their monotony broken only by the endless quarreling among themselves, and the arrival of newcomers. Finally, a sufficient number of disciples on earth became conscious of conditions in the compound so that by combining their invocative strength they could do something about lifting some of the karma. They offered their assistance in making calls on behalf of the prisoners. If an individual in incarnation asks for help for another, whether embodied or disembodied, under divine law that help must be given. Page 191. But the assistance granted depends upon the amount of energy expended by the person who is making the request. A half-hearted request calls forth a half-hearted response. That is why most people complain that their prayers are not answered. A sincere request is in effect a demand, and it is not only the privilege, but the duty, of an evolving God to demand whatever he requires for his successful evolvement. A begging attitude or a servile approach to God will result in nothing, except possibly more trouble. God is a good God and he wants only perfection, only abundance, only beauty, only harmony for his children. The only demand that will penetrate to the higher spheres is a demand for these attributes. When a person demands harmony in his life and affairs, he immediately sets the law into motion and is granted assistance by masters and angels alike. So much energy was expended by disciples in requesting help for those in the compound that finally Lord Michael himself was able to take action. The calls for help were continued over a period of years, until finally in 1957 the last prisoner left the compound, using his free will to make the constructive choice to serve the light. The compound has now been demagnetized and dissolved and will not be set up again. Under the Aquarian system, all disembodied persons are required to remain in temples of the violet fire until their personal rebellions are transmuted. The dissolution of the compound will also have a refreshing and wholesome effect on the unhappy land of Siberia, and, in fact, on vibrations throughout Russia, and even throughout the world. The compound was located in the area over Siberia because at one time, in long ages past, the physical territory was the focus for such extreme evil that Sanat Kumara ordered the land to be frozen. It is not always necessary to submerge an evil land, a deep freeze is just as effectual sometimes. In this instance, the angelic kingdom was called upon to freeze the Siberian territory, and they did such a thorough job in such a fast, efficient manner, that today bodies of animals are being dug up from the ground in a frozen state. And, in some instances, they still have grass in their mouth. In other words, when the big frost came, they did not even have time to swallow their last mouthful of food. Incidentally, the land has now been ordered to be defrosted and the polar ice caps melted in preparation for the Aquarian Age and new population movements. Scientists speak of ice ages and assume that such catastrophes were accidents of nature. But ice ages were planned, ordered affairs, designed to stop evil in its tracks. It is Lord Michael who cooperated with Saint Germain in the tremendous task of straightening the axis of the earth. This work was handled entirely by the angelic kingdom, but the great cosmic entities, Polaris and Magnus, governing the North Star and South Star rays, where these rays meet at the center of the earth, have cooperated in making the Axis project possible at this time. Actually, the long years of planetary housecleaning conducted by Lord Michael were preliminary to the Axis project, for it was necessary to lift the heavy karmic burden of the Earth and clear out much of the astral contamination before the angelic host could work on the bent axis. Furthermore, since it was the karmic burden that first caused the Axis to bend, there was assuredly no purpose in straightening it until the weight of karma was considerably lessened. Now that the axis is straightened and the ray forces can act on the planet in a direct rather than an eccentric manner, changes will take place with incredible speed. These changes will occur among disciples almost at once, because disciples have long worked for the new Aquarian order. They welcome change and are not frightened by mounting evidence that the old order is being swept away. They understand the divine plan which the hierarchy is trying to precipitate, and they want to serve as co-workers in that precipitation. They have supreme faith only in God and have no faith whatever in man-made institutions wherein God is not recognized as a co-worker. Therefore, they are not distracted by the glamour of militarism, politics, economics, and church unity, because they have not placed their trust in these booby traps. Arthur H. Matthews clearly declared the depth of his dedication to New Age developments when he advised seekers to go straight to God, as Tesla had done. Tesla did not fear change even when it meant that his new inventions would obsolete his earlier ones. Nor did he ever attempt to harbor secrets concerning his discoveries. Arthur Matthews has pointed out that the lectures which Tesla gave in London and in America between the years 1889 to 1894 contain all information that is needed to construct virtually all devices patented by Tesla. These lectures have been collected and printed in book form, and have been available at least in all major libraries throughout the Western world since the turn of the century. Yet hundreds of readers have scanned them and passed them by as interesting but not practical. Mr. Matthews attributes this lack of realism to the darkness in which men's minds are immersed. The darkness of materialism, he says, that Tesla's lectures cannot be understood by those whose minds are not attuned to God. Matthews has actually tested out this theory in the presence of top-flight scientists and engineers who visited him to inspect the Tesla set for interplanetary communication. These men looked at the set, they asked questions which were frankly answered. Mr. Matthews even went beyond that point and gave several hints, but not one seeker could even guess at the underlying scientific principles which Tesla had discovered and which made the set possible. Yet these same scientists and engineers and hundreds more of their kind are the very men who are called into government service and who are supported by the taxpayers. They are presumed to have sufficient intelligence to handle whatever scientific problems arise in the course of their work. Yet the greater part of their energy is expended in trying to maintain an attitude of secrecy so that the long-suffering taxpayers will not find out the cold scientific facts advanced by Tesla even before the year of 1900. How many Americans know that Tesla designed the Sphere, a powerless aircraft that the Allies might have used to end World War I even before November 1918? And that might have been used to launch an air age 40 years ago which would have rivaled the jet age of 1958. And how many Americans know even today that Tesla had designed another aircraft far superior to the Sphere, and that he actually built a model of it in 1893. And how many people in the world today realize that Tesla knew all about cosmic rays long before the turn of the century, and that in 1891 Tesla built a cosmic ray engine, a free energy device, to utilize the rays, which, like God and electricity, are everywhere. Just as an electric generator by force or by some other action brings electricity into motion, so did Tesla's cosmic ray engine bring the rays into motion. Tesla was the original discoverer of so-called radio waves and invented the wireless to utilize these waves. But Tesla knew that the operation of radio waves depended upon ground currents and induction, therefore they were earthbound and their action extremely limited. When Tesla designed the set for interplanetary communications, he therefore avoided the use of radio waves. The set will not receive on any frequency used on Earth. The small model which Mr. Matthews built is designed to receive from spaceships which are at least 5,000 miles above the surface of the Earth and not more than 30,000 miles distant. Mr. Matthews believes that our entire electrical system as used here on Earth will not work beyond 8,000 miles out in space. However, when he first contacted spaceships on the Tesla set, the space people told him that our radio waves did not reach much beyond 5,000 miles, and that it is impossible to send a message on the present Tesla set from a spaceship more than 35,000 miles distant. Mr. Matthews has since started construction of a new set which is expected to provide a wider range, and he is incorporating many of his own discoveries in it, although it follows the basic Tesla design. The interplanetary communications set is, however, only an interesting gadget. Like the telephone, it requires someone on the other end to make conversation, otherwise, it is simply connected with the silence of space. The set has no commercial value whatsoever, as the space people have no time to engage in idle chit-chat, and they are assuredly not in the entertainment business. They use the set only when they have an important message to give to Mr. Matthews, and do not wish to take the time to land on his property and speak to him personally. They explained to him in the very first conversation that they had contacted him on the set because of his great faith in Tesla, the Venusian they had brought to Earth as a baby in 1856. They have, in recent years, made a worldwide survey to find out exactly what we have done with Tesla's inventions. They have also probed the depths of our hatred for each other, which is the main reason why most Tesla inventions have not been utilized, and they have reached the conclusion that, according to normal standards in this solar system, the entire population of the Earth must be considered insane. When the space people landed for a personal interview with Mr. Matthews, they were primarily interested in stimulating renewed activity in the Tesla anti-war machine. They found the Canadian location of the Matthews property ideal for the landing of their ships. They had previously given Mr. Matthews details of spaceship construction, size, shape, and so forth, in talks on the Tesla set. Mr. Matthews has described his place in detail in his letters, and it does sound so delightful that it probably reminded the space people of our lovely, flower-decked globe which we enjoyed before the laggards came. Our place was originally an old Quebec farm, Mr. Matthews writes. I love trees, so I planted many thousands of them to offer shelter, to attract the birds, and for their beauty alone. My little electrical shack is just that. A small rough building surrounded by trees, just like a hen in her nest, and just large enough to hold me, a desk, bench, books and tools. Besides this small shack we have the barn. Really, a barn. Which we use for the larger stuff. But our real laboratory is the land. The open fields and bush, the mountain and the river. Here we study closely with God. It is wonderful what one can do when we walk with the Master. At one time we had a wonderful flower garden, but as the children grew up and got married off, and my lady and I traveled, we could not devote the necessary time to it, so at the moment we have a lovely garden of weeds, neck high, but the flowers do shoot through the tangle. Besides, we have a lovely inside the house garden. You know, flower pots which do clutter up, and which keep me busy watering when their slave is away. Offhand I cannot say how many flower pots there are, but they are plentiful. Anyhow, I use every bit of this property. In the winter I work in the old farmhouse which has stood here for over 200 years and which, like us, is old-fashioned. I have always been a tinker and always have something to fix for someone, from dolls to power plants. Then we must take time to listen to the wants and troubles of others, for there is always someone requiring help, which is our great joy to give, for this is our obligation to him. In the early spring we start traveling, and most summers are spent this way, visiting and helping others. By faith I am a Christian scientist, but let us always remember that Christ was and is the only true scientist. Mary Baker Eddy discovered a very wonderful thing in the Bible when she discovered Christian Science. Most people do not understand it, but even a slight study of her works does give one a better understanding of the Bible. I first obtained her works in 1937 and have found wonderful help through their study. It gives one a deeper sense of God and things outside our earth. Page 198. You have, no doubt, noted the mention of spaceships in the Bible? I am a member of the layman's movement for a Christian world. I am a Christian and don't care a hoot who knows it. I'm not a bit ashamed to display my belief in public. People who deny God are nuts. I have studied every branch of science. But I see pure science only in the work of God. I don't believe in pretense, bluff, bull or humbug. I never doubt anything until it is proved by demonstration and by every test to be impossible. I also believe that all things which man can think of are possible. In this work concerning Tesla, we must expect the materialistic world to be against us. That is our cross, but be of good courage, for God never fails those who have faith in him. Having a true understanding of God, we can do anything so long as we serve as witnesses for the Christ. We have the supreme power of God on our side in preparing the world for the return of the Christ, and I believe spaceships have a great deal to do with it.